Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Gray Matter. Well, today I'm very pleased to have as our special guest a man who I've wanted to have on our program for quite a while, actually. He was kind or crazy enough to have me as his guest twice on his podcast, and very interesting, very engaging personality, man of faith. In fact, I've entitled this episode The Evangelist. Hope he's not offended by that. I doubt that he is. We're going to talk about a number of really, really interesting topics, especially the work that he's been doing, and also some things that are of a political nature that have talked about on this program, but from a different perspective. His name is Leon Fontaine. So, before we get to him and do his introduction, as we always do, we're going to frame our discussion with some aphorisms. These have been selected in his honor, so I hope that he takes them in that way. None of these, there's no Stalin or anybody like that in these, Leon. The first one is from Martin Luther, who is quoted as saying, "To be a Christian without prayer is no more possible than to be alive without breathing." Secondly, from another Christian writer who's often quoted here, C.S. Lewis, who once wrote that regarding the debate about faith and works, it's like asking which blade in a pair of scissors is most important. Next, from Reinhold Niebuhr, again, a theologian who is often quoted here, famously wrote, "There's no cure for the pride of a virtuous nation, but pure religion." And lastly, from the good book, the Gospel of Mark, "For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his life?" That's Mark 8, verse 36. So who do we have on the program today? Leon Fontaine. Who is Leon? Well, Leon has a powerful and practical teaching style that keeps his audience coming back for more. Using the Spirit contemporary style he has made famous, Leon empowers people to be led by Holy Spirit in their everyday lives. Leon and his wife, Sally, enjoy hanging out with their growing family. They have 5 children and several grandchildren. So, Leon has studied and lived leadership for over 35 years. His early training as a paramedic forged his desire to help people of all walks of life, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And for the last 3 decades, he and his wife, Sally, have done just that from their home base of Springs Church in Canada, one of the country's fastest growing churches. Leon's innate ability to look at any situation and recognize what needs changing has made him a much sought after speaker and advisor for churches and corporations around the world. He's helped turn failing organizations into thriving and influential global platforms. Leon is an author, TV host, CEO of the Miracle Channel. We're going to talk about that. That's Canada's original Christian TV station, founder of Spirit Contemporary International and the Corco Plus streaming service. He holds a Doctor of Divinity from Covenant Theological Seminary. As a proud Canadian, Leon continues to pastor alongside his wife and his 5 married children, all of whom are actively involved in his ministry. And before we cut to him, we're going to show you a short video of Leon so you can see what he does.
The Bible also says wisdom is the principal thing. So it's important that you do your research and find out. Don't just kind of be an ostrich, put your head in the sand and say, "Well, I can pray this prayer and everything's fine." No, the Bible teaches us to use wisdom, to look into things. So we've looked into a lot of things for us, our family, Sal and I. We've checked into ourselves, done our own research on what we think about things like vitamins, minerals, chiropractors, doctors, drugs, vaccinations. There's such a controversy over everything today. And you know what? You're not going to be able to just figure it out even by just doing research, I found. But as I just did my due diligence, checked into things, found people who were qualified, what they say about this, what they say about that, then as I've gathered all this information, if I can't find out a clear, distinct, winner on which side, I go by what I sense in my spirit. Some call it a gut reaction. But I want to challenge you, besides that prayer, don't just sit around and say, "Well, I believe this." You know, It doesn't matter what you believe about gravity. If you jump off a building, that principle affects us all.
So there we have Leon talking about in the context of COVID-19. But I think he's going to agree with me. This is consistent with his style of ministry and his style of teaching. So, Leon, thank you very much for being on the program. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hey, it's good to see you again. We have good conversations, you and I.
Yes, yes. You're mostly responsible for that. But Kaylin is mostly responsible for getting you here, your lovely assistant producer. So we have to thank her for getting you here, which is great. Maybe we could start off with this, Leon. Could you maybe tell us a little bit more about the Miracle Channel, how you got involved with it, and maybe its genesis and how it's grown?
Yeah, Miracle Channel, a couple decades ago, I think, finally got a license because Canada wouldn't allow television stations, Christian television stations. You could have porn, you could have everything else, but you couldn't have a Christian one. And so finally, they gave one out. And then from there, there's been a couple more, and it came to the Miracle Channel. And so they started out in Lethbridge and seemed to be doing fairly well for a number of years. And then about 12 years ago, 2010, I was approached by the chairman of the board there. They'd gone through a real downturn and gone through a number of CEOs. And because we as a church were on their television station, as well as on secular television stations across Canada, he just met with me and asked me if I would just take it. Would you just take this whole thing over? And at that point, it was 3 months away from the bank closing the doors. It was in real trouble. There was just it was not going very many places. So we did. We thought about it. We looked at it, and we dove in because leadership is a big issue for me. It's something I just really have dove into. And we just applied the principles that we learned in raising up a megachurch, business principles, leadership principles, management systems, structures, administration, personality types, everything we could. And it just turned around from a channel. It was one channel that basically was on two satellites covering Canada, whereas today we now have two channels, and we have a VOD platform. And it is on all across the nation, not just on satellite, which is great, but on all sorts of cable networks. And then around the world in multiple languages, the programs that we're shooting, et cetera. So it caught real wind under its wings and it just took off. And so things like we're in 48 Muslim nations coming out of TV in Pakistan. I mean, incredible things. We're in Russia and we're in all of the Spanish countries. And so we're on different TV channels around the world. The programs that we're making here, his Miracle Channel brings other people on as well. So it has been a stunning explosion that in just 12 years has just set us back and made us go, oh my, look what's happened. And when I got it, it's a really funny story. When I came in, I met with the CFO and there, and then the COO who was running everything. And they just told me TV's done. It's shot its best days. It's finished. Let's just ride this out as long as we can. You won't be able to raise money. We could never get on any of the cable stations across Canada. So we're just on two satellite networks that cover it. And it was just wah, wah. And a lot of staff there. And as I begin to go through it, I mean, I'm a follower of Christ, but there's a business side to me. And we had to release person after person after person after person. And I worked with them for 6 months to give them a chance. Can you help me grow this thing? And it was just literally releasing person after person after person, bringing new people in. And late, it just took off. Wow. So we're pretty excited about it.
So what do you attribute this incredible growth since you took it over? You explained in part, obviously, you know, you did some corporate reorganization. It sounds as though you changed the philosophy, maybe the theology of what was going on there. But why is this caught on worldwide in this way? Do you have any explanation for it?
You know, I don't know everything. A couple of things that we did, so, you know, they might have something to do with it, was when Sal and I came to Winnipeg in 94 to a little church there called Springs. I was kind of raised in a Christian home. Both my parents were pastors. They were wonderful, real people. But I just developed this hatred for religion.
Really?
I don't know how else to say it. By that, I mean man-made rules that judges one another as to how we have to earn our right into God's good graces or into the church's good graces. I just saw the stuff that was going on in many cases, and I met beautiful, real people. And so when we came to the church, we learned leadership there because it exploded. It just doubled every year for about 5 years till we were in the thousands. And the issue was we didn't know how to handle it. And so I loved leadership already, so I dove into the secular world. I read my way through MBA textbooks that friends would give me and everything I could find on business and leadership and systems and structures and who to hire using the DISC system or personnel, like everything I could do, which was a no-no in the church. That was business. This is the church. We're just spiritual. Mm-hmm. And so the things that I learned there, and I'd love to dive in, you know, later on that stuff, but basically, this thing grew to thousands. We had to staff it. We had to park it. We had to look after hundreds of children. And then you got teenage. You got to park their cars. You could look after their babies. You have to have sanctuaries big enough. We did so many unique things in developing a church into the thousands that people said would never work. And in fact, one of the, forget his name, the guy who writes editorials for one of the big Toronto papers, he's an expert on religion. He just said that, you know, in 1990, I think it was 96, 97, right in there, he wrote a whole column saying Canada will never have mega churches. You know, and he had a point. He was talking about how socialistic we are and how anti-big we are, about anything that's big we attack because of this socialistic background. But when he wrote that, we were already past 2,000, doing 3,000, and the definition of a megachurch was 2,000 people. So we use those principles, which are just pure, beautiful, wonderful business principles, which are almost all in the Bible. We applied them to the Miracle Channel, and we just found that they needed to stop being, you know, just so spiritual. Because if when I think about it, there's two really good ways to put this. There's two things about the gospel that I love. The first is the person of Jesus. People will tell me I hate organized religion, but they'll always say, but I really like the Jesus guy. He's pretty cool. And so, you know, knowing Jesus is the key to your spiritual life and eternity with him. But so the people who are deep into the Jesus and you know, being born followers of Christ, they forget sometimes his principled side. The Bible is so full of principles. So I was in love with Jesus, this incredible, you know, God. But then I just fell in love with business principles all through the Old Testament, the New, the book of Proverbs, how they raised up countries, how to handle people, how to look at freedom, how to look at freedom of speech. Like all of this stuff was in the Bible. And I found out if you want a great legal system, use the Bible. If you want a great country, use the Bible. If you want a great business, use the Bible. And I had no idea as a young Christian kid that the Bible was so stunningly wise when the area of leadership, business, law, etc. So those are the two areas that I just really love. And I'm always studying both, knowing Jesus better. But then how can I help people? How can I help this world, nations, etc.?
I want to come back to that discussion and to talk about that in the context of what's happening in Canada today, where let's face it, we appear to have become a godless state where we don't have God in his proper place as the head of state. So I want to just park that. I want to come back to that because I think that's an important topic, and I want to mine your own wisdom on that. But before we go there, you have a very fascinating history that you've sort of teased me with a couple of times when we've talked about how you started out as a young man as a paramedic. So you've said that you're brought up in a Christian home. Your parents are pastors. Did you grow up in Manitoba?
No, I was born in Porcupine Plains, Saskatchewan.
Oh, there you go.
Grew up through all my school ages in Weldon, Saskatchewan, and then moved to Winnipeg in 80. And then Sal and I moved to, to Selkirk in 80. And then Sal and I took over a church in 94 in Winnipeg. And then in 2010, started a campus in Calgary. And so I go back and forth every week, raising up the campuses. And we've got buildings and things in different cities. So it's pretty cool.
So what? How did you become a paramedic? What was that period of your life? Was that a time when you had maybe turned away from the, you said when you were sort of turned away from the church and thought you might get into some different type of secular vocation? So how did the paramedic career come about? Because I know that you talk about that, and that seems to have been a very important influence to you in your life in terms of forming your vision for what you were going to do in your ministry.
It was. My mom and dad were amazing. Like, you know how everyone blames their mama for something, or their dad, or how they were raised? I have no excuses, because my dad and my mom are two of the most strong, happy, loving, Christ-like people I know. And so I was raised in an amazing home and enjoyed the Word of God. Had a real problem with people when people in church would try to bring religion or fight or gossip or backbite. In my teens, I began to hate it. I'll never pastor. Mm-hmm. And so when dad moved to Selkirk, I followed them shortly after, and I got a job working in a hospital. And there were no paramedics in Manitoba, and they chose this ambulance group in Selkirk as their first paramedic pilot project group, working with the doctors in the emergency, being trained by the doctors in the ORs, the emergency rooms, etc., very hands-on. And so they asked me if I'd like to apply as I was working there in materials management. And so two things that really happened was, the first was I knew that some people had really painful lives, but I had no idea till I started picking up raped children and disfigured women and murderers and a drunk killing his own family and not realizing it, and just the grief, the brokenness, suicides, a 12-year-old suicide, a 7-year-old suicide, just the things that go on. And I just realized how much people needed to know how special and wonderful they are when the world has treated them like garbage, and they start to believe that. So that really opened my eyes that the church does have an answer, but not religion. When I use the word church, I mean followers of Christ, and churches that would really pursue Christ have an answer, but not religion. Religion was awful. So that was the one thing. But the other thing that really hit me in these dual tracks was I had to learn leadership. Because when you came to the scene of an accident, if there was five bodies laying on the road, we had to learn to triage, which means we had limited resources, and we would take a we had triage tags, and there would be four colors on them, black. And if I tagged somebody black and I was the first guy on the scene, that meant no one touched him. Even if he was breathing, nobody touched him. You touched him last. There was no hope. This guy's going to die. Red, you always went to a red tag. That meant that he had just a short time to live. He was bleeding out. He had broken back, very badly hurt. Then an amber tag you'd go to next, the green tag last. So a guy could be sitting there with a broken arm, brutally broken arm, his cheek hanging off his teeth, looking just like horrible. And all the rookies would run to the guy screaming, and they'd run to the guy that had looked messed up. But we had to learn to triage the scene. We'd triage patients. They gave us systems, like when you came on the scene, you would always look after safety first. Are you safe to even walk into the scene? Are there hydro lines down? H was, do you need help? Call the power station before you get out of, or call Manitoba Power, whoever, before you get out of the ambulance. Do you need police? Is there a gunman running around from the gunshot victims? And so we had systems for everything. And those systems would help us not to forget, because rookies would go to the scene and be working on multiple patients, and then 20 minutes later go, where is everybody? And forget they hadn't called for backup. So we had systems of handling scenes, handling danger, handling patients. We had ABCs. We'd look at their airway first. You know, then, you know, are they breathing? Is the airway open? Anything occluding it? We'd look at their breathing. Are they breathing? Because you could be looking at a knife wound. The guy's got a knife right in his chest and you're dealing with the knife, but he's not breathing. You got to get him, put some air in his lungs first and then see with circulation. And so we had all these systems and we were to manage an accident scene and maximize survivors. And you ran into screaming and lights and sirens and a mom upside down in a car with a dead baby in the water. And she's screaming for help, hanging upside down. You come into things, it is not a cute little classroom. You had to get very good at minimizing every emotion and walk in there and maximize the survivors. So mm-hmm. I loved it. That's where I first really learned leadership. And if we went to the scene of an accident and there were patients there that were the most important, the head of police and the head of fire would submit to the person in charge of patients, would have been, which was me when I was supervising there. If there was danger, because a guy's running around with a gun, the police were in charge of the scene until they got rid of the danger. If there's down power lines or fires, then the head of the fire would be in charge so we could make the, so we had really unique systems to deal with this. And I brought all of that into the church when I came in there. And how do I help people? How do I, you know, find people? What systems do I put into place? And I just took all the things I'd learned there and I tried to morph them mm-hmm. into helping real people rather than just preaching at them.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about this a little bit when I was interviewed on your podcast, which we're going to talk about. But wouldn't it have been great if Dr. Dina Hinshaw would have had someone like you as her advisor? Because what you just described, this rationalization of resources, is exactly what the governor of Alberta failed to do. And so many people died as a result. Yeah. And so many resources were not only wasted on people who didn't need them, but, you know, now with what we're learning about these vaccines and the risks of them, many people, younger people, have been exposed unnecessarily to risk of serious bodily harm and even death, because we didn't do this, the type of rationalization that seems to be fundamental to all crisis situations, right? What you're talking about there, that accident scene you just described, that could be, as you said, you could apply it to a church situation. I mean, we've had similar situations, not to the same degree as your accident scene, but in a law office. I mean, every time I come into the office, I've got to prioritize my day. Some things are really, really urgent. They've got to be done right now. Others are important, but they can wait. But we didn't seem to have any of that through the COVID file, did we?
You know what? When you look at this issue of, I like the word triage because it makes people think a little bit differently, but it's leadership and it's prioritizing it. You know, when we'd go to an accident scene, all the rookies would run to the screamers. I never even looked at the screamers because they had an airway because they can scream. They're breathing because they can scream. They haven't bled out because they're conscious and they can scream. But every bystander and every rookie would be going to the person shrieking and screaming because they got a busted jaw or you know, they've got a broken arm. They're in pain. They're scared. And it was often the quiet people sitting there dying with a pneumothorax or unconscious or standing with the crowd. And we call them walking wounded. They'd be standing because they got out of their car and they're standing there and they've got a bleed in the brain. And we'd take off if you didn't do this right. You'd take off thinking you had all the patients and he was standing with all the people. And so leaders who, so as I begin to apply, that's where I first learned leadership. Then I began to read my way through all kinds of business leadership, everything I could. And it really is true that, a leader has to look at, it's like the Titanic captain. You know, on that fateful day, he had a lot of issues. You know, the cooks had burnt the roast for all the people. And they hadn't wiped down the salt on all of the decks. And, there's problems with the band. They're not going to be able to do their 5 o'clock. And there's icebergs in the water. And, like, what's the priority here? Because if you do not work with the priorities and you don't properly diagnose the priority, the patient dies. Mm-hmm. People die. How many people died because he didn't give a priority? the icebergs. And so when you talk with great leaders, okay, and there's great leaders like the head of an emergency room when they come in, and paramedics, ambulance, fire. These people are so trained to walk into a situation and just, they just read it. They just read it so quickly. It's second nature. And then for them to watch any leader that goes down to problem number 11, they kind of go, what? And that is not a leader. And so leaders are found out very quickly. And the cost is huge when we put people who are not leaders and have no training or understanding, or they don't care. A leader has to be, I like the way Jesus puts it, that a leader has to be not self-centered. You know, it's not all about your next term. It's not all about your next paycheck. It's not all about, depending on where you're a leader, like government or business or education, tenure. Like there's, everybody looks after themselves. And if you're in a leadership position, the very first thing a leader should do is it should be a servant leadership, which is a secular term as well. You know, Robert Greenleaf wrote that great book on servant leadership, that a leader is here to serve the people with that leadership gift. And when they serve themselves, you see, people talk about influence and manipulation. When a leader is manipulating people, it can look like leadership. But a leader should influence people. And often the only difference in the techniques is motive, but you find out pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to come back to talking about leadership and also the concept of freedom, which I know is very, very seminal in your church and in your ministry. But before we do that, I just want to cover off and talk a little bit more about the Miracle Channel and its mission statement. There's a statement of faith on the Miracle Channel. Would you like to explain about that that I found on the website? Because I thought this was really, really
Read it for everybody, and then I'll go for it.
It says this is a statement of faith for the Miracle Channel. It's not a requirement that the statements within this document directly mirror an employee's statement of faith. However, is the basis for the programming and production that Miracle Channel produces, and employees are expected to be familiar with the statement of faith and a thorough understanding of its concepts or its contents. And essentially, what it talks about is pursue Jesus and find life. And it talks about, you know, the beginnings of the church or of the channel back in 1996 from a small signal in Lethbridge. And it's grown into a TV station with multiple outreaches, bringing hope to Canada and the world. And as you described it, Canada's first and still the only all-Christian TV station. And it names some of the pastors here, Joyce Meyer, Dr. David Jeremiah, Joel Osteen, and local pastors in Canada, just a few of the lifelong friends you'll become familiar with on our channel. And here's the key thing, I think. One thing you should know, in everything we do, our goal is to share the truth about Jesus to people, so they can experience his love, joy, hope, peace, and victory. And it's all funded by donations from people like you. So when I read that, it seemed to be that was sort of foundational to the concept of the channel and its ministry. Did I capture it, or is there more there that you want to talk about?
No, I think I would add this to that, because the ministry has schools, television channels, churches, all under one ministry. But we have this culture that we call LAF, L-A-F, and it is a perfect look at Jesus and how he treated people, so that people should be loved. And by that, I don't mean any emotional, I get goosebumps when I see someone. It means you value people, even when you disagree with them, you value them. Mm-hmm. And then A in LAF is you accept them the way they are. And here's where people mess up. In order to change someone, you have to judge them. And Jesus tells us to not judge them. Don't judge the heart. And so we accept them the way they are, as messed up or as perfect, whatever, you know, whatever they think they are, we accept them the way they are, because we don't have the ability to change people. I mean, people who've been married long term will tell you that after 50 years of marriage, they haven't changed a thing in that person. And so we want to create this space, this place where people can come as they are, and they don't feel forced, they don't feel manipulated, they don't feel, but they can just come and learn and grow about Jesus. And so we accept you the way you are. And then F is just to forgive. That when people don't learn that forgiveness is the greatest gift you give yourself, that when someone has hurt you, offended you, broken you, you know, done something to you, that when you are offended and you do not forgive, the pain is all yours. It doesn't do anything to the person that did something to you. And mm-hmm. So learn to be unoffendable. It's not a word, but it's a great concept. Unoffendable. So that you don't want to give up your joy, your peace. You don't want to give up the great life you've got by spending the rest of your life offended and angry and mad and looking for vengeance against someone. So this LAF is who Jesus was. I mean, when you read about Jesus, and I mean, a woman's caught in adultery, she's dragged in front of him by all these religious people, and they're trying to trap him. And he was so cool when he said, "Let anybody here who's without sin throw the first stone." Mm-hmm. And they all dropped their stones. And what was kind of funny was that Jesus could have thrown a stone because he was without sin. They all mm-hmm. left. And Jesus said, "Woman, where's your accusers?" She mm-hmm. says, "They're gone, Lord." He says, "I don't accuse you either. Go, sin no more." Like the way Jesus handled people was he left their self-worth intact. He wanted to know how special and precious people are to him. So that's really something we like to do with the Miracle Channel, Springs Church, Springs Christian Academy, the different organizations we run, is people are very valuable. And if mm-hmm. you can, let's help them. And if we need to rescue them, let's rescue them. And there are people that hate and they're angry too. And so we've got to be safe and handle those as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to just take up that concept that you just laid out and maybe flesh it out a little bit. Recently, we had an American theologian on the program named Carl Truman. Perhaps you're familiar with his work. He's written some brilliant books, one on the life of Martin Luther, but he's really gone into an examination of how the glorification of the self is destroying culture and is really anti-Christian and it really goes against the core of the teachings that you're talking about. So when you talk about acceptance, mm-hmm. One of the things that Carl was talking about is how, for example, if you take the LGBTQ agenda, mm-hmm. there what happens is they will tend to attack anyone who does not affirm and accept their ideology, which they regard almost on the level of a religion. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but it almost seems that way. So as a Christian pastor, as a teacher of Christianity, who's spreading the message of the gospel, how do you reconcile that when you say we accept people as they are and we don't judge them? How do you reconcile that when they're attacking what you believe in and what you fervently believe is the truth about man and God and the universe?
Yeah. First of all, I would have to say that I don't like how the church world has judged the LGBTQ group. I don't like what they've said. I don't like what many have done because they have taken religion, which is trying to push it on people. It's judging them. Now, the beliefs that they have and the decisions they have to live their lives. God, when Adam and Eve in the garden, when they made the decision and they begin to go with Lucifer, with the enemy, and go against God, he didn't quickly intervene and try to, he let them make their choices. All choices have consequences. Even when it comes to the biblical teaching on heaven, he'll never force himself into someone's life. You have to invite him in. Believe on him. Invite him in. But he'll protect your freedom to believe what you want and to do what you want, as long as you're not hurting someone else, right into eternity. Mm-hmm. And so God has given such freedom to people to make their own, we call it free will in the church world, and we don't touch that. So when I look at people, and there's so many exciting ways we could go about this, but like judging, for example, nobody likes being judged. The Bible says, do not judge. But you have to judge in some areas. So what should you judge and what shouldn't you judge? Well, the Bible's brilliant at this. It says, do not judge the person's heart, which means their motive and their intentions. That is left to God. But we are to judge their actions. And so we don't need to say, that's just a bad man at heart. He's evil at heart. That's no. Just judge the actions. If you, for example, if I'm going to get a babysitter for my kids and the neighbor's got a daughter on one side, and I mean, she is just loving and caring and considerate, has a moral compass, a stand that's close to ours, for example. On the other side, I mean, she's smoking dope out of the car, and you know, she's doing drugs, and she's got a different boyfriend in the back seat steaming up the windows. I've seen her staggering into the house, hardly able to stand up, and they both apply for the job to babysit my children.
Wow.
So the one who's drunk and drugs and different boyfriends, and she's got a babysitting course. And so she's got, you know, and she's got her lifeguards. And so when I don't hire her and I hire the one who I like how she controls herself, handles herself, et cetera, the other girl can look at me and say, you're just judging me.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you handle that? Well, to do life, the word, the Bible talks about knowing people by their fruits. That simply means track record. We are to know people and we're to judge people by their track record. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to let, you know, her with my baby and you know, my little three-year-old or, you know, years back. No way. They're too precious to me. Mm-hmm. And then if she's going to teach them things and they're in their teens that I disagree with in my beliefs. And so every person who hires somebody judges their track records. You look at it, you go through it. And you have to before you hire people, or you would be a very foolish person. But you do not judge the heart, meaning your motives. That's a bad person, that's an evil person, etc. And so this is where Jesus gives us a really easy way to handle that. And so that judgment is something we've helped our church and our ministries understand, is that we all have freedom, and those freedoms rub against each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got a freedom of movement, but one of your freedoms is to own property. So, you know, my freedom to travel, when it bumps into your ownership of property, we need to figure this out. But I love the fact we've got all these freedoms. So we've got laws and things to help us to figure out that our freedoms don't rub against and hurt somebody else. And, you know, so there's a big difference between justice and law. And so when I look at people and I go, you are free to come in to our church, to be a part of the things that we do, and we value you as a unique and an incredible person. We accept you the way you are, recognizing that you get to choose the life you want. You get to believe what you want. You know, if you don't believe in gravity, you still get to believe that. Now, gravity will still affect you. And one day playing soccer on the top of a 15-story building, you're probably going to fall and you're going to die, because your belief that gravity's not real has no impact. But I will champion the cause for you to be free to believe what you want and to live out your freedom. So when I say I accept people the way they are, that's cool. But I also accept that back. And so I'm saying, I value you the way you are. I accept the way you want to live, the things you want to do, but if it rubs against my freedoms and raising my kids, and then we have a problem now.
Okay.
Because now I want my freedoms as well. And so Jesus did not say to give up our freedoms. No. And I know that there's duties and responsibilities to make freedoms work. And so this laugh really helps a lot of people when they come in and they look at me and say, well, you don't think I'm less of a person? Oh, I value you. Yeah, but I think completely different about you sexually. I think different than you this area, that area. I'm so different than you. Cool. You want to grab a coffee? Hey, you're free Saturday. Let's go golfing. Let's go golfing on Saturday. You see, I don't meet people and get to like them based on how they have sex. I meet people and just like them because of their personality and how much they accept me and allow me to have free. And we get together, the conversation's just going everywhere and laughing. There's so much in common that human beings have.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we pick on these things? And so we accept people the way they are. And
so is that sort of striking at the core fundamentally of what Spirit Contemporary is all about? I know you've talked a little bit about it. It's that it's not a, it sounds as though your church is non-denominational. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a welcoming community, but what are the other core characteristics or fundamental beliefs that make up Spirit Contemporary?
Well, the term Spirit Contemporary wasn't a change from beautiful, wonderful biblical doctrine. And so we didn't know what to call it because people were coming and loving it. And we just said, we want to be spiritually alive because it's Jesus that brings life. Now, the letter of the law, it kills. You try to follow the Bible without a relationship with Christ, and you're going to be in a lot of pain. You're going to cause people a lot of pain. But once you know Christ and you have a relationship with him, he changes you on the inside. And then when it comes to, but I went off topic. What was your question again? Go for it.
Well, I was just asking about Spirit Contemporary. But
oh, right, Spirit Contemporary.
What you just said just sort of reminded me of the quotation from Martin Luther that we started off the show with, where he was saying, you know, trying to be a Christian without prayer, you know, is like trying to live without breathing. And that's really what you're talking about. If you're just focused on the Bible, but you don't have this personal relationship with God, with Jesus, then really you're living outside of God's grace. You're not connected to all that power, all that mercy, and all that faith.
So
right?
That's the wing, Leighton. On one side of a plane needs two wings. So the one wing was being spiritually alive, knowing Jesus, a relationship with him, knowing his word, because it gives us great principles. Now the contemporary side was being relevant to whoever we're talking to. So if a Christian, invites a plumber to her house, and she's just gung-ho, and she meets him at the door, and she says, "Praise the Lord, glory to God. Aren't you glad you're washing the blood of the Lamb, and you're righteous and sanctified and saved?" And the guy's looking at her like this, going, "Is she killing sheep in the backyard? Is what's wrong with this woman?" Because she has no ability to speak his language. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just the different languages of the world we must be good at speaking. We must be good at speaking the language, how many dialects of Canadian and age groups. And so it literally means that we should be able to communicate in their language. We use the word sin. Here's a good example. Mm-hmm. Now, anytime the person hears the word sin, it just they think if it's sin, you go to hell. Well, that's not actually biblically true. The word sin, hamartia, which is most often used in the Greek, means to miss the mark for God's best. So when I talk with people, rather than using a word they don't understand, I explain it. It's like the guy who met a new lady and he wanted to invite her out. He goes, "I'm going to take you out for a picnic." She goes, "Never." He goes, "What? What do you mean never?" Well, when he thinks about picnic, it's a blanket beside a little stream and a beautiful tree over top. And I mean, he's got a bucket of chicken. He's got his head in her lap and she's feeding him chicken and the birds are tweeting in the trees. He's got this picture. The word picnic is so romantic. Now, when he says picnic, she sees mud on her designer runner. She has got like poison ivy all over her arm. Sap is dripping off the tree into her hair. And I mean, so the word picnic means two different things. So most people don't take the time to connect. So one of the things we tried to do to be Spirit Contemporary was to take a lot of the principles of Christ that have not been upgraded into modern terminology. We're not changing them, but just modern terminology. And then when we explain to go, "Well, I agree with that." I said, "Of course you do." You know, to miss the mark for God's best. I mean, if I'm rushing in here and because I'm trying to get to the studio on time and I see this little old lady and she's staggering with some groceries and I don't have time and she's hardly getting across the street, probably would have been smart. It didn't happen, but probably would have been smart for me to stop. mm-hmm. and help her out? What if she falls in the midst of traffic? And so the best would have been to have done that. And so we don't all hit God's best, because the Bible says there are sins of commission, but there's sins of omission. There's things you could have done better and you missed God's best. You know, you probably shouldn't swore at your wife when you got all mad and laughed, you know, and so you missed the mark for God's mm-hmm. best in that situation. And so when I explain what sin means, and basically there is one sin, the Bible says, that can cost you your eternity, and it's where you stand with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so when we talk with people, we try to stay where they are. People say, well, you know, that's compromising. No, it's not. Jesus did not sit somebody down and run through 613 Old Testament laws. Mm-hmm. He actually fed the hungry.
Mm-hmm.
He healed the sick.
Mm-hmm.
He accepted those who were being rejected, like Zacchaeus or the woman caught in adultery. He gave people first their felt needs.
Mm-hmm.
And as they begin to respond to their felt needs, that is when they begin this beautiful journey of knowing him. And so Spirit Contemporary is no compromise, but it's being it's telling we want to present Christ, and we want to be a church that is spiritually alive, a ministry, and we want to be contemporary. We're not going to compromise anything. We want to explain what that means, and we want to just take the time to unpack that, so that people, you know, people already feel they feel so low in their identity that when they come into religion and all you hear what you can't do, what you're doing wrong, and you're being attacked from the pulpit, people hardly have self-worth left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hardly even wonder if they're valuable. And so when if we can just share with them that God is so in love with you, he's got a plan for you, he cares about you, he'll work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why Spirit Contemporary is important, because the world has already got all of its beliefs about church. If you invite someone to church, you go, oh, I'd rather go to the dentist. Because when you say church to them, it means condescending. It literally means, like, I've got people going to our church that were kicked out of their last church. She's a mom with three kids. And when her husband divorced her, they didn't want divorcees in their church. That's religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that, so we open wide our arms, and church should be a messy place.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning what? Well, where the stalls are dirty, the oxen is working. Where churches are dirty and filled with all kinds of people, the gospel is working. It's attracting amazing people, hurting, broken, you know, messed up, or lives going perfectly, and money and finances and career, and this massive emptiness on the inside, which is why they're committing suicide and taking their own lives. So Spirit Contemporary is crucial to us, so that as wherever we go, whatever we do with television shows, messages, you know, schools, etc., that we understand how beautiful Jesus is. And we, you know, people say, well, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible I don't understand. You know, I get it, because there's an old agreement and a new agreement. And I'm not a Biblian, meaning mm-hmm. I don't follow the Bible. I follow Christ. I'm a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So that means everything in the Old Testament has to come through the New Covenant,
right,
as you look at it. So I'm not following every verse in the Old Testament if the New Covenant has superseded some of the wrath and the tough-looking stuff in the Old Agreement. But anyway, I want to do a lot of doctrine there, but that's kind of a quick look.
That is wonderful, and it also explains in large part why your message has been so popular and has really, why your church has grown so quickly. But implicit in that also is sort of a common sense analysis of world events and culture. I was reading about this on your website, and it says here that your passion for current events offered an intersection of knowledge and wisdom has been percolating for years. Recent events in Canada, around the globe, have propelled the conversation forward. The erosion of freedoms has never been so widespread, and the need for unbiased journalism is more important than ever. The high value of people and the right to think for themselves, we're talking about your podcast now, that's our segue, Return to Reason, endeavors to present the whole story so viewers can make fully informed, wise decisions to bring positive change to their lives, communities, and to the nation. The time to act is now. So tell, could you explain how return to reason fits in with the concept sort of hand in glove with Spirit Contemporary?
Well, as a pastor, I loved teaching people about Christ. He heals the brokenhearted. You know, he brings you into his family and he adopts you into his family. He qualifies you for all of the promises that used to have ifs on everyone. He's so in love with us. He's got a plan for our lives. Everyone is gifted. Like, I love that kind of teaching. Then when COVID hit and I begin to go, I'd like to make a decision here, but no one's telling me anything. And I'd like to know. I recognized that using the television network that God had given us, that we needed to help people get the whole truth. Because the Bible teaches how to get wisdom. And all through the book of Proverbs, it says, it talks about these three words. It talks about knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And so knowledge is the facts. And God does not give you the facts. It says he'll give you wisdom liberally if you ask, and wisdom is the application of the facts. But knowledge you are to go get. So my people perish for a lack of knowledge is a biblical principle. If you don't have enough knowledge on something, it can kill you. Mm-hmm. And so go after knowledge. Now, understanding is where, as you meditate on this knowledge as it applies to you, that then you can make wise choices. These three steps appear all through Proverbs, Psalms, and Jesus' teaching. You'll see all these. The New Testament is really a rewrite of the Old Testament as we see Jesus into this new covenant. And so when we looked at return to reason and we realized that we literally were moving in a direction where leaders were saying, trust me, I'm smart, I'll make the decision for you. And I get that to a certain degree. If I hire you to look after a legal issue I have, I don't have time to go take the multiple years that you've taken. And so I'll hire you, but you and me will meet and you will explain to me with all this expertise as to why we're going to pick this course of action. And as a good lawyer, you would make sure I understood the course of action, how we're going to defend or how we're going to sue, and then also the risk factors involved. So when a citizen like me begins to look at all this stuff, I say, well, could someone just explain to me, what do you mean about China? What is this about the World Health? Or what do you mean the CDC? Like, who says? Do we have tests? Like, nada, nothing. Just we say it's good and you should do it. It literally shocked me. I used to love programs like Charlie Rose and others that would put a brilliant man on this side of the table, another brilliant person on this side of the table who disagreed with each other. They'd have a cup of coffee, they're smiling and talking, you know, and then as the show comes on, they'd begin to debate back and forth with such respect and statesmanlike ability. We used to love those kinds of shows and they don't appear anywhere. And so when I felt like I was being censored and that I couldn't get information, and that they didn't maybe even want me to have the information, we'll make the decision for you. Then I recognize they have broken down a literally biblical system. I need the facts. Give me the facts. Well, we don't want to cause too much terror or whatever the reasons are. No. The greatest thing you can do for a democracy and for citizens is give them as much facts as you can, because then they'll see the wisdom of your decision. Or maybe you can engage many of the brilliant people who are citizens and have degrees and experience in the process. So that's why we started Return to Reason. It was just, we've got to return to reason. And so we tried to grab topics and I we wanted to just produce more information, because people who spoke up who were experts were just getting taken out. Losing their careers, their jobs. I mean, the woke issue of canceling them out and destroying them, making them look bad, lying about them, which they tried on me too. Good Lord.
I had my turn too, Leon.
Yeah, and you had your turn too. And you know what?
High five.
if you just hang in there, You know, most of the stats say that if a cancel culture takes you on and you just hang in there, that the bottom line on the bottom dollar is you're going to come out the other end. But in almost all cases, I mean, I watched all sorts of religious figures and business get up and just apologize for stuff they said once they believed. Then they couldn't believe how much they were being affected to stand up for what they believe. And now they're apologizing for it. And so many people are going, if you're going to say something you believe, would you stand up for what you believe? We're in a free country to do that. So return to reason was to not try to take any political side. And it was to say to people, I'm going to get you as many facts as I can get you. You know, I'll bring in some experts. I'll wade in with a little bit that I've learned about leadership and this process of how do you make wise decisions. And I just got excited about it. And I mean, it just took off. People started sharing it with their friends. People would write us and send money to keep the program going. Say, I'm an atheist, but I love what you're doing. Here's a check to keep Return to Reason going. Like, because it wasn't a religious show. We weren't trying to get everybody to say Christianity is the way to go. All we were doing with the Return to Reason show was to say, we're going to try to gather the information maybe you haven't heard, or maybe if you've heard, it's been changed. And we want to just feed you the information so that you can take some time to think and meditate on your family, your health, your career, your Canada, your freedom, your etc. And then you can make the decisions. And so we try to do it in a way that treats people as brilliant people who can make wise decisions for themselves. And people just seem to love this show.
It is tremendous. And I know that throughout many of the episodes, there's a broad cross section of guests. I encourage people to check it out. But one of the things that you were critical about, and I think you've explained why, are these non-pharmaceutical interventions, these lockdown measures. But I think you've explained the reason why you were questioning them is because, number one, you couldn't see the factual, rational justification for them, and they offended what's obviously one of the core principles, one of the pillars of your church, which is personal and religious freedom. And these were all being interfered with. Do I have that right? That was a big part of why you were so critical of the lockdown measures?
Yeah, for sure. Even aside from Christianity, which of course is something that I believe we need a freedom for, but I mean, if they really would have had a brutal disease right out of the Congo that was just killing people one after the other, I'd have no problem working with government to say, we need to keep people safe. Absolutely. You know, I'm not going to use my religious freedom to kill people because this thing actually is so deadly. But so we tried to do everything in our power to work together until you begin to realize the price that it was costing people. And I promise people, with all of the research that we've done and the people we've spoken with, that the years ahead are going to show you the toll, the bodies that have stacked up, the things that have taken place to our society. When we first heard the word on this thing, everybody should be super cautious. And then we should examine and re-examine and get brilliant people involved to see, is it worth, you know, I lost a sister-in-law to cancer. It was minor when we had it, but no one would see her because we're all on standby to look after COVID. And finally, when they would bring her in, she was 4 stage and died on us. And she's just 50, 55. And everybody's got a story, real stories of how they tried to stop one flu. And this is the death in the numbers on it. And then people in all the other areas weren't being looked after. And so this whole area of leadership that I grew up in, especially working, I was working in a hospital. So I worked in the ORs. I did endotracheal intubation in the ORs, the IVs for the ORs. I was a part of the crash cart team when people 99, when they brought people in from car accidents, if I wasn't on the call, I would be in the resus room. So I learned and I'd seen some of this stuff. And I was just really surprised, and I just wanted people to get information. It was the biggest deal for me that, yes, freedom. I agree with freedom, but I'm also fine with wisdom to say, we need to be cautious here. I don't mind saying we shouldn't assemble right now because the bodies are lined up on the sidewalks and people are dying. And I'm going, oh, we don't care. We want to. No, that wasn't the issue for me. I just wanted wisdom. I wanted the facts. Mm-hmm. And I want the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I wanted everything they could share with us. Not, well, we'll talk to you 5 years down the road when we figure it out. Well, no, we're all making decisions for our families and appendicitis and a child who's got allergies and anaphylactic shock and a cancer's not getting into, like, we all are making decisions here. Mm-hmm. Business is going bankrupt. We need to be informed. And so the freedom of the press, you know, that there's so many beautiful movies made about men and women who stood up for the freedom of information and the press. And the movies are, they just stir you when, you know, governments were trying to, and now we don't know if we even believe much of mainstream area mm-hmm. because they were telling us one thing while we're watching another.
Mm-hmm. So part of the impetus for Return to Reason is also in terms of truth, but also in terms of leadership, the goal is to provide people with information so that leaders will be held accountable, because that's fundamental to leadership too, isn't it? So that's part of the goal of Return to Reason. Yeah. It's a great show. Not just the ones that I'm on, although I was happy to be on.
You were great on there.
Enjoy being on there. So we've kept you for quite a while here. I have a couple more questions though, if you don't mind.
Let's go.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and this is getting back to, again, to Christianity, is that it's my impression that Christian values are under attack in Canada and the West, and that this has been going on for a long time. And so I'm curious, you know, because you've been involved, you've lived a life 35 years in your ministry, and you've done so much with your online programming and the growth of your church and your ministry. What practical advice could you give to people watching this program, taking in this podcast, who are feeling this way, or feeling like, you know, I'm a Christian, I hold traditional values. My values don't seem to matter to my government. In fact, they seem to be anathema to my government. I don't want to salute the rainbow flag. I want to be proud of my country. I want to be proud of my family. I want to live the life that I was, you know, I want to have the things for my children, my grandchildren that I grew up with. What can you say, or what advice could you give to people in their daily lives in terms of practical steps they could take to give them, say, for some more hope going forward in their daily lives?
I would say we need to let go and recognize the horrors of religion, which is beliefs that people are trying to push on others. And I see a lot of these groups where, you know, religion has just come after them swinging. And of course, they're doing the same thing. But when it comes to Canada and freedoms, we need to go back to this ability to do what, you know, the religious people asked Jesus, what are the most important laws? And he started talking about, you got to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And then love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. It is a stunning portion of scripture. And it says neighbor. Interesting word. It doesn't say someone sitting with you at church. It doesn't say someone sitting with you in the same belief systems. Neighbor. And so that we are to love them, which a better word maybe in our vernacular is we need to value that person. Mm-hmm. And so we love God. And the Bible says, now abide faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. When we get our focus off of our insecurity, you know, and our own significance, and we accept God's love, then we stop trying to lift ourselves up. Like people are hurting and broken, and so many Christians are too, because they just, everybody wants to feel significant. They want to know their lives are significant. They want to know that what they're doing is significant. And so this search for significance, it's people are fighting and coming at each other. But what gives me value is how much God loves me. And once I find my significance, God absolutely loves me. He thinks I'm amazing. He thinks I'm awesome. He created me. When in my mother's womb, he placed the gifts in my inner parts, Psalms 139:11 says. And when he's in my heart, I mean, my heart cries out, Abba, Father, Daddy. He is so in love with me. So he thinks I'm awesome. He knows I'm not perfect, but he thinks I'm awesome. And so there's my identity. Now I'm free to love, value people when they don't think I'm valuable or they don't treat me as valuable. It doesn't matter, because if I place my significance and my value on what others think about me, the Bible says that the fear of man is a snare. Mm-hmm. And so snares would grab a rabbit by the foot, and then they're only got a 3-foot radius to try to escape, and it'll try to escape and escape, and there's blood everywhere, and the grass is all beaten down. That rabbit is snared. It's never running free again. When you begin to care too much about what people think about you, and so you need to believe what I believe, and you need to celebrate me, and you better be there for me, even if you don't agree with me, it's all because, where do I get my significance from, my value? And so I love this issue of, if we can just go back to saying that I'm excited and I champion the cause of freedom, even for people who live their lives in ways that I will not teach my children to live that way. Mm-hmm. It's missing the mark for God's best in that area. And there's many areas that we all disagree in. But we give this freedom to walk your path out. And now you must give me that freedom back. I think I literally have, you know, the producers and the, you know, the research people and all that who are working with me on this show, Return to Reason. We really feel like we need to educate people who don't even know what freedom is, or free enterprise, who don't even know why truth and the whole truth is so important. They need to know why huge government making your decisions will eventually hurt you. Like, I don't think people even know. And so we need all kinds of training programs and teaching programs, whether it's a TV show or, you know, where we begin to show people, every emerging generation, again, knowing why is democracy so amazing, so beautiful, and so, you know, what about all these other forms of government? We all kind of went, but the sleeping giant has been woken up. Mm-hmm. And people who thought that, someone will look after it, and they're realizing it's not. And we need to wake up, and we need to get involved, and we need to make sure that every generation, our children and our children's children, know what freedom is. And the Bible is just a brilliant book. I was chatting with a guy who of another religion. And so I was catching a cab somewhere, and him and I, he was just talking to me excitedly about how we all, you know, we all serve the same God, and how interesting it is. And as he was just chatting with me about that, I just recognized that, just lost my train of thought there, but let me see if I can find it, that we have the right to be free, but this freedom can't hurt the other, which is why we've got a legal system that we got to protect and be careful with and got to use it when we need it. I had a thought and I dropped it there, because I had, sometimes you get too many thoughts in your head you want to say. Oh,
I think we got it. I think the key one there that I got is that, you know, that the sources of significance, this is what's your ministry is God. God is the logos, right? That's the source of meaning, and everything flows from that, you know, freedom, everything else that's good about life flows from that. And it, you know, also what you were just saying now about respecting each other, of course, this is something that is very poignant as well, because we're so divided now because of the, you know, the type of leadership that we're getting in this country. we're all fighting with each other. And of course, as you know very well, that is not what God intended for us. That is not our happiest, that's not our best state of being. And so, I get the message loud and clear, and it's easy to see why your message is so popular, even among people who aren't Christians.
Yeah, well, I think, Leighton, that we have to admit that to keep democracy going and to keep freedom going, there becomes a complexity to it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, put any kind of leader anywhere in government or business or healthcare or education, doesn't really matter. No, it's crucial. We need brilliant thinking people with acumen that can wade into this and recognize that every decision has consequences. Mm-hmm. It might be down the road a little bit. And so leaders are responsible for getting that information out there. And there is a complexity. Well, you know, I want us to value that other person and to accept them the way they are and to champion the freedom they have to believe what they want. Then it still comes into, but what if these freedoms rub up against another freedom? Mm-hmm. Because right now it looks like a takeover where, you know, mm-hmm. you can't talk about anybody except a white Christian. You can attack them all you want. Mm-hmm. And
it feels like a siege for those of us on this side of the picture. That's what it feels like. But what you're saying and what you're giving is a message of hope that, as Professor Truman said when he was on the program, he said, well, we all know how this ends, right? You know, God wins in the end, right? So we shouldn't worry about that. But at the same time, we still have to live, you know, we have to try to live our lives in a way that's peaceful, where we honor each other, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and what's interesting about the Bible is it says that the followers of Christ, I'm going to use that term because Christian has been just taken over by everybody. True followers of Christ should be salt and light, hugely influential in our world. And if you read the New Testament, which is the story of 12 itinerant evangelists bringing the gospel to the then known world, and you try to say every Christian has to be that. No. We are raising up kids, and the Bible's got tons of principles on the longevity of family, countries, how to raise up great countries, how to develop law where people are going to respect each other and live together. I'll make one quick point. A lot of Christians have end time doctrines that are defeated, that are wimpy, that are, well, you know, Bible says that devil's going to win. We're all just going to hang on there till we get out of here. But that's not biblically accurate. Mm-hmm. It sells good books, all this end time stuff. But whenever he comes back, he's not going to leave me. But until then, he says, occupy till I come. And that word occupy means to trade and do business and rise up in leadership. And so the church is supposed to be the head and not the tail, above and not beneath. The light's supposed to grow brighter and brighter until that perfect day. There are so many promises to us that if we will follow Christ in a spirit contemporary way, even Paul said, pray for me in Ephesians 6, that I could explain the gospel the way it needs to be explained to people, to the Jew as Jew, to the weak as weak, to those with the law as with the law, to those without the law as without the law. His whole thing was about how do I explain Christ to people rather than a canned gospel with all the do-nots? How can I share him in that way? And if we all can become truly spirit contemporary, which is what Jesus was, everywhere he went, everybody liked him except religious people. And then mm-hmm. he called them whitewashed coffins. And he told them, you know, when you get a disciple following you, you make him twice the son of the devil that you are. So mm-hmm. religion, this man-made way of judging one another and telling you better be doing this if you want to be right with God, it's a free gift, mm-hmm. salvation. You come as you are. You can't mm-hmm. change anything permanently without him. Mm-hmm. And so you believe on him. And you start this exciting journey of discovery that's pretty amazing.
Brilliant. Well, that That's a great place to leave off. We've kept you for quite a while here. We're very grateful for your time. This is a part of the program where we do something called the reading list, Leon. So what I'm going to do is, if you don't mind, I'm going to go first. I'm going to talk about a book. I'm going to recommend a book. And then I'm going to give you a couple of give an opportunity to recommend a couple. I'm going to recommend a book, but then two resources that will be familiar to you. The book I'm recommending is called The Screwtape Letters. I don't know if you've ever read this. It's by C.S. Lewis. It's a wonderful story. It's a classic religious satire. And it what it does is entertains readers with a sly and sort of ironic portrayal of human life and foibles from the vantage point of Screwtape, who is a highly placed assistant to our father below, meaning Satan, at once mildly comic, deadly serious, and strikingly original. The essence of the story is that Screwtape is an apprentice demon, and he keeps his job is to corrupt this one person, and he keeps screwing it up because, you know, fundamentally he has this essential goodness that prevents him from being a very good demon. And but it's a poignant story because a lot of the things that Screwtape is being told to do by his master are going to be very, very familiar to people who've lived through the era of COVID and government, and excessive government. So that's my book recommendation. And then there's a couple here that will be familiar. One is called Devoted with Leon, which is one of your publications. And also the other one of yours that's called Supernatural Promises, Meditate, Connect, Transform. So recommending those to people. And so over to you, Leon. Do you have any recommendations? First of all, are there any places besides your website where people can find you? We're going to show all these links, but are there any other places where people can find you and can find, learn more about your church and about your ministry?
I think if they go to leonfontaine.com, the website, it'll take them from there to wherever they want to go. And the social media is in my name too, Leon Fontaine. But if you're talking about books, there's, you know, some of these old books that people, a lot of times people will buy a book, read the cover, the first chapter or the last page, and they feel better having owned the book. you know, and so we've got big stacks of books we've bought, but Robert Greenleaf, I believe it was his name, on servant leadership. For anyone who's just saying, I want to teach my kids leadership so they are it and they recognize it, is a brilliant look at how to raise up a great country, great organizations. I think that you would really enjoy that. You
know, I'm going to buy that one and send it to our prime minister.
And the book you mentioned that we wrote on, The Spirit Contemporary Life, right. I should explain it because the title, you know, it is a book that takes a new look at following Christ. And it shows all through the book the supernatural help of God that helps you in business, health, relationships. So many people, even Christians, will, you know, they're trying to serve God in their own energy, and then they have an emergency. Now they're screaming and praying, God, help me. And I was trying to show them that that spirit contemporary life is each day in prayer and just simple reading his principles and watch his power, because the word miracle is kind of, it means then you wait till you got an emergency, but actually there is supernatural ability that God gives us to be a parent, to be a husband, health-wise. There are prayers. And then I should, in fact, let's go this way. Your life continually will have him helping you once you see, and just some of the miracles and the things that I learned in that book. And it goes right from my day of being a paramedic to a pastor. Some of the things I learned about handling money and doing business deals and the buildings and the stuff that we've got. Just being a parent, God's help in all these areas. Because people are just crying out. They're broken on the inside. They, you know, where do I go from here? And I think it would help them.
Can people also tap into all of the episodes of Return to Reason by visiting your website?
Yeah, it's on leonfontaine.com. Also, returntoreason.tv has just the Return to Reason stuff, and they can get all the interviews. And one of the things I really appreciate is just the staff that we have that do the research. And then Frontier Public Policy Group came along, and mm-hmm. we started talking, and they're working with us as well. Brilliant men and women. So they can, you know, we just ask them, you know, check this out for us, sign off on this. And they've been an amazing help to make sure that, and then people everywhere that help us out, that we have access to information and stuff. So yeah, returntoreason.tv will get them all out.
Wonderful. Well, this has been a splendid conversation. So grateful to have you on the program. I wonder if you wouldn't mind ending things off with a closing prayer.
For sure. I'd like that.
Okay. All right.
God, you've been listening to Late in the Night Talk. And for everyone that's listening, I'm asking that you would just do something in their life this week that would let them know that you're real. Whether it's a miracle, whether it's a sign to them, whether it's something wonderful that takes place, that they'll remember this prayer. But I'm asking every person that watches this interview that, Father, let something take place in their life that'll keep them going in the right direction. Because you said, God, seek and you'll find. And I'm asking you to help them with that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Leon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Leighton.
We'll have